Hi, welcome to Backstage Soundtrack, where we talk to musicians about music and discover some new tunes along the way. I'm Tom from Hot Tub Time Machine. This episode features Sydney singer, songwriter, DJ legend, KLP. KLP, or Christy Lee Peters, is best known for her growing back catalogue of bangers, featuring her distinctive vocal sound. She's worked with Skrillex, What's So Not, and many more, and in 2020 she teamed up with Space Cadet for her biggest hit yet, Energy. In this interview, we chat about her incredibly musical upbringing, which saw her singing in ad jingles in primary school, in a girl band signed to a major label at 13, and how some early knockbacks made her even more determined to succeed in music. We listen to some Beatles, No Doubt, 10cc, Radiohead, and plenty of great dance music. If you want to hear more of those songs, there's a Spotify playlist in the episode description. We recorded this interview in August 2021, remotely over Zoom from our homes in the inner west of Sydney. I hope you dig it. How are you going?
I'm good. Yeah, so I was just saying, Monday and Tuesdays, my partner Nick, who, I don't know if you've ever met him, he's part of Setmo.
I think I might have done a gig with him years and years ago. Have we ever met, Christy? I'm not sure.
I don't think so.
No, it was lovely to meet you. I'm Tom. So the first thing I want to ask you, KLP, is if we were to look at your phone, what's the last thing that you were listening to?
Well, the last actual thing I was listening to was the end of a podcast.
Yeah, what podcast?
One by this guy called Tim Ferriss. Have you heard of him?
Oh, tell me about Tim Ferriss. Was he an NXS guy? That's another Ferriss.
No. No. Tim Ferriss, he is, I don't even really know much about him. I just kind of listen to things and I'll listen to a whole podcast and then my partner Nick will be like, oh, who was it? And I was like, I can't even remember his name, but I kind of just like take little bits of info from it.
So you're a podcast
but
skimmer.
You skim
across podcasts without delving too deep.
I'll be doing like four things at once. Even when I had a radio show, I would know songs and I would know like all the words, but I wouldn't know much about the artist or about, you know, the song title or whatever, but I just know the words. I don't know why, but
I'm the same way. I tell people my music taste is a mile wide but a centimeter deep. I know a tiny bit about a lot of shit.
Oh my God, that's the same. Yeah, so I was listening to this podcast. It was a Tim Ferriss one, but I cannot tell you who he was interviewing, but I know what it was about. Mm-hmm. It was a guy who talks all about living your rich life, and he kind of talks about like how to get rich, but not as in how to actually make money, but as in how to enjoy your life and spend the money you have on experiences. And, you know, it was really interesting. So I was kind of listening to that. I just had like 10 minutes left, so I listened to that. But music-wise, before that, I was actually listening back to some demos of things I've been writing.
Sure.
I kind of go through stages where I write and then it's like I just block it off and I don't do it. Then I sit down and I open up this well and things just come out. I don't know if you're the same. Have you become more productive since you've had kids?
It's hard to – I started Hot Tub at the same time I had a kid. So like in 2012 I had my eldest daughter and then became a DJ. Before that I had a whole other career. So but it definitely sharpens your focus.
Yeah, I watched your Insta TV like little rundown. So
awesome.
I, you know, had the backstory. But that's – I feel like when you have a kid, you have less time, so you can't mess around.
Less time to procrastinate. Yes.
Yeah, like if you have an hour to get something done, like you just do that because you have no other choice because you're going to have to pick them up from daycare or, you know, they're going to come screaming in through the door. So the time that I do have, I'm really productive.
Hey, so you listen to demos. And so what does it sound like? What do those demos sound like?
They can be all different levels depending on, you know, what it is and whether or not I'm starting the beat. Or the ones I was listening back to today, someone else had, I actually heard his song on the radio and I Shazammed him. I was like, who is this artist? And then it was an Aussie artist. And so I hit him up and was like, let's do some writing just on Instagram. And then he sent me a bunch of beats, which are, you know, like fairly fleshed out tracks, you know, 80% kind of done. And then all I'm doing for those is writing the top line, like the lyrics and the melody. So
okay. Is that kind of your specialty? Like, I'm not a producer. So like a top line,
Yeah.
Explain that to to people who don't know about.
Yeah. So a top line is essentially the lyrics of a song and then the melody. So the vocal, whatever the person would be singing. And yeah, I definitely think that is my specialty. I do produce, but I am not the producer that's going to sit there for 5 hours finding the right snare sound. I don't have the patience for that. I'm all about the vibe and the groove and the energy, and then I would prefer to have someone else go and do that.
When you started out, did you do it all yourself, like in your first EPs and stuff like that? Was it all a one-man band at those days? Or?
It was, and then it got to a stage where I signed to a major label and then fell into the trap of getting other people to do it for me because you think I'm not good enough to do it, but then you end up releasing music that doesn't sound like you. Right. Now it's kind of going back the other way where I'm doing more now and I'll find specific people, and I guess I have the creative control to find the people that I want to do stuff with. But my dad is a musician, and so I grew up with a recording studio, like, you know, like you, or like I guess what my kids are going to be like, where I would come home from school and my dad was there doing music. So it was always just running through my veins, the idea of writing music and producing and lyrics and things.
So what does your dad do? What's his story?
My dad, he's a musician, a songwriter. So okay. He runs a recording studio. He famously wrote a bunch of jingles that you would definitely know of, and it always comes up. When I was on Triple J, they would always reference it. Recently on the ABC show Gruen, they got him and myself on to talk about this because they were talking about famous jingles. So do you know all the Lubemobile jingles?
Of course I do. Of course I do. Lubemobile will come to you.
Tell me more. Yeah, so like, you know, with the, that's 13, 13, 32. They fix the car. That's me and my brother. Not the visuals, just the voiceover.
It's so
good. We grew up singing jingles, and my dad, he's a serious songwriter that writes amazing songs, but, you know, for money, he would write TV commercials, and he was very good at it.
Right on.
Yeah, so very, very much influenced by him.
So, like what kind of, do you have any, like, songs that you particularly remember or, like, that affected you? Or like...
Yeah, well, I mean, so many, but... If I was going to pick one, it would probably be one that he used to sing to me when he would put me to sleep. And I now sing it to my daughter. And it's Golden Slumbers.
Oh, what a song.
You know, it's like, once there was a way to get back home. To get back home. Sleep in a darling. Yeah.
Once there was a way.
It's so good, isn't it?
To get back home. Once there was a way to get back home. Sleep, pretty darling, do not cry. And I will sing a lullaby.
But for me, it was like the whole, that second side of Abbey Road. Like my dad was massive into the Beatles too. And we were just, particularly Abbey Road and the Double White were like kind of the only ones that he was really into. And we would just listen to that second side endlessly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the Beatles stuff, but that song he would sing to me as I was falling asleep. So I guess if I had to pick one, that's very sentimental. As I was older, I think, you know, when I maybe hit 20, I went back through this huge Beatles stage and then even like Lennon stage and was into, you know, I remember when I was first driving around and I'd like drive around listening to Whatever Gets You Through the Night. It's all right. It's like him and Elton John. It's all right.
All right. John Lennon and Elton John.
Do you know that one?
I don't actually.
Oh, my God. It's so good. Oh, put that on. It's so good. I think it's just called Whatever Gets You Through the Night. See, I never know. I could sing it to you, but I don't know.
Whatever Gets You Through the Night. Here we go.
Yeah.
Whatever gets you
through the night. It's all right. It's all right.
Bet your money while you lie. Oh, yeah.
It's all right. It's all right. Yeah.
Man, the 80s was a good time for duets.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like Doobie Brothers,
yep.
10cc.
Tell me about 10cc.
Do you know much 10cc? Okay, so they like this.
Oh, Dreadlock Holiday, I know, yeah.
I say I don't like cricket.
Dreadlock Holiday, Things We Do for Love, and One Night in Bangkok, I think are probably their more famous songs.
Like One Night in Bangkok from Chess.
One Night in Bangkok. That one. Not that I like that song.
Hi, guys. Tom here, coming to you from the future when I'm editing this podcast. I don't think that she meant One Night in Bangkok from the musical Chess. I think she might have meant Une Nuit in Paris, a 1975 song by 10cc. I looked it up and it's actually kind of amazing. Apparently it was like one of the songs that might have influenced Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. It's like a 8-minute odyssey, Une Nuit in Paris by 10cc. Check it out.
But my dad would listen to that and I loved it. I was obsessed with harmonies and like layers and all of that kind of stuff. Anything with a harmony, I would just, oh, I still love harmonies and layers. You can hear it in the stuff I write now.
Yeah. So were you like attracted to singing and stuff? Like what instruments did you learn? Were you doing music when you were a kid or singing was your thing?
Singing has always been my thing, and very much my main instrument, and harmonies and layers and vocal production. But when I was younger, I'd played flute for a few years.
Okay.
Yeah.
My little daughter's trying to do flute at the moment. It's like,
oh, no way.
It's a Lizzie. She's just starting the school band and stuff. She really struggles to get a good sound, and she gets all frustrated and she's kind of let it go a little bit.
I did music theory and I went to a school in Sydney that was a performing arts high school.
Oh, right on.
But I was like the laziest, just, I don't know, I was kind of way more all about like performing and the vibe. I actually recently, 3 years ago, went back and had piano lessons because I have a really good ear and I've got close to perfect pitch, but I'd get in the studio with someone and I could sing them the chords I wanted to hear, but I couldn't speak the language. And so I was like, okay.
As a kid, you didn't have the attention span to practice, do the nerdy practice to get – is that kind of what you mean? Or?
I think my ear was too good. I didn't need to.
Right.
Because my dad brought me up singing and I remember him saying things like, can you sing me the bass line? Can you sing me like this?
Awesome.
Can you sing me this? And I'd sit there and – so I was kind of taught – with my ear.
Right.
And so I didn't really ever focus on the other stuff.
Okay.
But I went back and had some piano lessons a few years ago because I was like, I need to be able to speak the language when someone doesn't have the ear but has that. I need to be able to talk to them if I'm writing music with them. So I went back and studied it.
So what was teenage KLP into? What was your jams?
I was into No Doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Loved Gwen Stefani. Yep. Gwen Stefani.
Just a Girl.
Anything, Just a Girl. Take this pink ribbon off my eyes. I was also into like Silverchair.
Yeah.
Jeff Buckley, Radiohead.
90s.
Yeah, very 90s. I was in a girl group signed to a major label, like a pop group when I was in my
What's the name of this girl group?
Signed to Sony. We're called Real Blondes. You can look them up. Whatever you do, I'll never break your heart.
I won't let you. This is when you were 13, you were signed and in a girl group. Far out.
I've had many different lives in music. I've literally been working my whole life and I think it'll be a very long and interesting career.
Yeah.
But yeah, signed to a major label at 13. So I wasn't at school much. We would travel around performing at Carols in the Domain or at the time like Pepsi Charts or like House of Hits, those TV shows.
How many people were in Real Blondes?
Three.
Okay. And yep. Were you doing originals or covers?
They were originals. Like you can Google it. Type in Real Blondes, We Be Cool.
We Be Cool.
We Be Cool. Like just the letter B.
Is that enough? We be cool.
So how did you, like, how does something like that come about when you're 13? And this is before, like, you know, talent, on TV talent shows and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was, I think, like, just as they were starting to do those kind of things. It was like Vanessa Amorosi era.
Late 90s?
I think it was like 98, 99 kind of thing. I have just always been obsessed with performing. And at the school I went to, Newtown, at the time that I was there, you'd go to roll call in the morning and they'd also read out any auditions that were on. And I would just turn up to anything. And I went to an audition looking for singer dancers and I went to it and got it, not really knowing what it was. And originally it was just going to be like an independent release, but then the record companies kind of found out about it and, we then got signed to Sony. We weren't very good. If you look it up, it's, but yeah, that's the thing. At the time, I thought I was going to be the Spice Girls, and at 16 it was over and I was devastated. Like, I had my first failure in music and thing ending at 16, which at the time was really hard. But I think that's why I'm still going now, because it made me so resilient. And I remember at the time my dad saying, this is just the first of many things ending. You've got the option to either, you know, give up and kind of cry or pick yourself up and figure out what you're going to do next. So it's made me very resilient having to go through that and kind of go back to school with all these teenage girls giving me a hard time, because I wasn't the Spice Girls.
Well, totally. This is such a devastating age for that kind of thing to happen. But so then what did you do next? Well, you finished school and then what did you do?
I finished school and I moved to Melbourne. I followed a boy to Melbourne and kind of like partied for a bit, because I guess I'd worked as a teenager. So rather than going to a university and getting a hex debt, I went to Melbourne and got like a life experience debt just through partying.
And were you working? Did you work in hospital or anything like that?
I was working. I did a few different things. I studied makeup so I could work as a makeup artist, just as I wanted some kind of a creative day job.
Yeah.
And then I was always doing bits of music. I met the guys from Panao and I did a bunch of stuff with them. I discovered that I could sing really well as a child. So all of the Panao stuff, you know, Baby.
Yeah.
That's largely me.
Yeah.
I was teaching singing at the time to kids, so we'd kind of go 50% kids and then 50% me singing like a kid. So I was always doing music but wasn't earning any money from it, but, you know, dabbling in songwriting. And then I think I got to about 24, broke up with a boyfriend, came back to Sydney and was like, all right, I need to start taking music seriously. And the thing that changed was when I started DJing, because so strangely enough, like, I always knew how to DJ. Back when I was 18, I dated a guy that had they would DJ off turntables, and I would stand there in his room picking out the records, like, based on the cover, and I'd just be beat matching, like, and I wouldn't know, it was like house music, so I wouldn't know what I was, like, techno, but I was just doing it just for fun, because I think, you know, if you're musical, you can understand the grasp of, you know, beat matching. So I kind of had that. And then
you want to participate in the music too. That's the impression I get. You're not going to sit there and, like, just watch the DJ. You want to, like, get up there and work out what's going on.
I want to do it.
Do it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to be on the stage,
not
watching.
I knew that. 100%, yeah. But then that was kind of years back. And then when I'd moved back to Sydney, again, I was out partying and another boyfriend was DJing at Oxford Arts Factory, back when it would be open till 6 or 7 a.m. and it would just be like queues down Oxford Street. And I would always just go and be like, let me mix. And I remember one night I was there and he was like, I'm going to the bathroom. And he just walked away. And I was like, just totally shitting myself. And he was like, you're fine. And I was like, oh, my God. And he didn't come back for a while.
Is this on CDs at that point? Or what technology?
It was. Yes, CDs.
The CD folder full of burnt CDs.
When I first started, oh, my God, so heavy and so big. I once left it in a taxi.
Ooh, brutal.
But, yeah, so that's how I started DJing. And, you know, you can make really good money if you're DJing. So then from that moment on, I became a DJ just...
What year are we talking about then? Like, when would that be?
Yeah, so that would have been when I was like, I think I started DJing like 11 years ago or something. Like, okay. It would have been like 24, 25. And yeah, my first residency was Oxford Arts Factory, playing like the 3 till 6 a.m. set.
And what kind of tunes would you lean on? What were some classics?
Everything.
That you might drop?
So, like, kind of similar to what you do. So, I would play like mix of genres. I would play like hip hop, disco, party tunes, kind of not current and not dance music.
See, it's
which
actually
is what
pretty
I
rare in 2010.
Play.
Like, not many people were doing that in Sydney. You had to play house music, really.
And I loved it, especially because I have a love of all of that music. It was so fun to do. But that was the game changer because it was enough. I could then work Friday and Saturday nights. And I'd go from venue to venue and make enough money to quit my day job and then start writing music full time.
Mad. Awesome.
So, yeah, I became a DJ.
Great. Hey, I wanted to ask you, like, your music is kind of synonymous with club sounds, really, with, like, kind of dance music and stuff like that. When did your love for that come about? Like, sounds like your dad was pretty into rock and roll. I'm not sure. I can't imagine it would have been his cup of tea.
Definitely isn't his cup of tea. I don't know if that's – I'm sure he's proud that I'm a musician, but he probably listens to my music and he's like, what is this?
No, he loves it. Of course he does. He's your dad.
When I was about 18, I wasn't going out clubbing to, the big venues. I was going to like a party in Sydney called Mad Racket. I don't know if you
Of course. Fantastic. Is it at the Bolo then?
Yeah, Miracle Bolo.
It's like an underground Sydney house music legendary place.
You would just go for the experience and the music, but you wouldn't know what the music was. And I first kind of got into that type of music there. And then when I first started DJing, like years later as KLP, I was still playing a mixture of stuff. I think I was kind of finding my sound because it's very different when you DJ for other people and you have to play to a brief and you have to like go from Cargo Bar to Oxford Arts Factory to the Argyle and like play the music that they want you to play. Then it was like, what do I like? What do I like playing? And it was almost just years of playing that I got to a stage where I was like, this is what I like playing. And then that influenced me and my own writing because I was kind of writing other music for KLP, but then I couldn't play it in my sets. So, which it just seems stupid now. It's like so obvious. But at the time I had to go, okay, you need to write music that you can play.
Yeah.
Duh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it just took a bit of trial and error, I guess.
Of course. Well, a couple of things on that. I reckon it's the most underappreciated form of DJing. It's almost easier to get up at a festival when your name's on the banner and do what you do. If you're at a bar with drunk people where you've got 3 hours to fill and you have to take them on, you have to give a little bit to that part of the room, a little bit to that part of the room. You have to keep everyone happy and keep, you know, but you're never going to keep everybody happy. You have to. There's an art to it.
Yeah. And if anything, it made me a good DJ because it wasn't like I had a hit song and then had to start playing. I'd had years of playing those horrible gigs to people with people having requests and, you know, all of that. Same as Nick, my partner, how we met. Yeah, just playing so many gigs. It was a great time though. I really loved that time. I lived in King's Cross in Sydney and I would just go, you know, I'd start at 5 p.m. and I would go till 6 a.m. and I'd go from venue to venue and just play so many gigs.
Was Nick DJing at that time as well?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was DJing. So we'd kind of cross paths, but...
That's lovely.
Yeah, he was a bit of a smart ass, so I never took him seriously.
Thought he was too cool?
Yeah, he was like a little bit younger than me. I mean, we've been together 9 years now, so we've, you know, it's been a while and we've got two kids together. That's but wonderful. His music partner, Stu, I was friends with Stu before I was friends with Nick, and we'd just see each other kind of DJing around. And then when Nick and I started seeing each other, I remember Stu just going, oh, God, like my two mates getting together, this is going to end terribly. But, you know, 9 years later and we're still here.
Totally. So tell me who you like. What kind of music do you do?
Okay, new music.
It can be old music. It can be new music. It can be anything.
I mean, Tame Impala.
Ooh.
But the thing is, I don't write music that sounds anything like I would be influenced by Tame Impala. But
sure.
I love Tame Impala. Another thing that is so cool is the recent album by Fred Again.
Ooh. How do you spell Fred Again? Like, is it as in like Fred Again?
So just Fred and then new word Again. So again, I don't know anything about him. The only thing I know is actually from what Nick's told me from conversations we've had. But apparently he's a very successful songwriter with pop music. And then this was kind of like a little side project where throughout COVID he would just take his laptop and he would only make it on his laptop and be recording sounds that he, you know, could find out. Right. Oh, yeah, this song, We've Lost Dancing. Oh.
Oh, yeah, this one. It's like
our space we've lost. We've lost dancing.
It's kind of that bicep style, kind of chilled out.
Yep.
All these things that...
Beautiful.
And this song, so the whole concept album is he has sampled people and he recorded it all just on a phone. But the topics are very much last year. And when I first heard that song, We've Lost Dancing, because the vocalist talking about, you know, we've lost dancing, we've lost, you know, hugs and all the things we did kind of lose last year and take for granted. When I first heard it, I think it came on my release radar on Spotify or something, and I was listening to it and I was just crying. It just really like hit me in the feels. So that whole album is beautiful and I've been listening to that a lot. And I still put that song on and it just gives me such emotion, especially with what we're going through now.
Sure.
Such a cool record.
Well, tell me, I want to ask you a bit about your own music. Specifically, like, I'd love to talk about energy if you're not tired of talking about it.
No.
Is it your biggest song that you've done?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely my biggest song.
It's kind of wonderful after all this time, all this work to like...
I know. You know? I was like, finally! finally! And the thing is, when we wrote it,
When did you write it? Like, how long ago was it?
We wrote it in January 2020.
Okay.
Stace Cadet and I have been friends for years because I think he remixed one of my songs and then we became mates and he does graphic design. So he had actually done all of my artwork up until now.
Terrific.
Very like super multi-talented. He was coming up to Sydney and said, let's jump in the studio. I had literally hours, I think, because I remember I dropped Sienna at daycare. I turned up to the studio and I was like, we've got 2 hours, mate. Like, we can't mess around. And we just wrote this song. And this is what I was talking about becoming more productive since having a child, because we just had to do it. There was none of this. Sometimes you get in the writing room and then you like listen to references and you're like, what are you into? What's been inspiring you? Oh, this is just like, let's go. Like, you just have to just let the creativity go.
Yeah.
Which I think maybe some people would find hard, but for me, I almost enjoy that. It's like, boom, it's on, let's go.
Pressure.
And we wrote that song, and I remember coming away being like, is this silly? Like, which, yes, it is. But that was the vibe. I was like, let's make it sweaty and obnoxious. That was the energy, for lack of a better word, that we were kind of going for. And we wrote it. And then I think he stayed up that night, and I woke up at, 6 a.m. and he kind of texted me and was like, I've got something. And I was like, oh, you're up early. And he said, no, I haven't gone to sleep. We kind of just finished it via correspondence and had no expectations that it was going to do what it did.
It's just so joyous.
Yeah.
So
well, I try and write really positive songs. I'm always trying to sneak these subliminal messages into my music. Even with People Happy, I wrote that when we were in lockdown last year, and I had the vocal idea and I called him and I was like, right, the next song is going to be called Happy People. And it was slightly different. It went like, people happy in your body, your da-da-da, like slightly shorter. And then through speaking to him, he was like, no, make the people happy, move it through your body. And we just wrote it via a phone call. But that was because we were all so unhappy at the time.
Yeah.
So I was like, let's write a song about being happy. But energy, it was such a simple thing. I wish I could give more about it, but
I'm interested though. What's it like at the start when you're coming up with that vocal riff? Are you like singing over like a kick drum, or are you singing over a riff? Are you just like kind of going, just singing?
I've probably got the voice. I've got the voice memo somewhere of the original thing, but it's...
Is that something you do? Like, you get an idea and you just pick up your phone and you'll just like, just kind of...
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just like these inner demons coming out where just ideas start flowing. I can't really explain it. You just kind of let the creativity go. And it's like if you were just jamming along to something. I guess it's like a modern day scatting or something.
It's kind of, it's kind of something very, most songwriters say a similar thing, that it just kind of, the ideas just kind of come.
I wonder if you can hear this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's me just kind of going, which it changed slightly in the end, but I have so many voice memos like that of me mumbling.
It kind of feels like a nursery rhyme cadence sometimes when I hear energy, like kind of like a schoolyard thing or something like that. It reminds me of like old Tom Tom Club things. Have you ever crossed those?
Yes. Oh my God, Tom Tom Club. Yeah. Well, that was the whole thing. It was like, this vocal is going to be sweaty and obnoxious was the, they were the two words. It was like, it has to be that. And yeah, just almost like fun and silly and very nursery rhyme. And I guess drawing from back to the Panau vocals, where I learnt that I could do that kind of chanty vocal, we wanted to make it like that.
It must be interesting as someone who, because I imagine, I know that you can belt, like you can sing, you can like do musical kind of singing, can't you? Like if you
yeah,
need
but no one knows that, and it's so funny because it's. I'm sure there are so many people that have things like this where it's like, yeah, but I can do this thing really well, but then you get known for something that is so different. Even DJing, I remember always thinking, I'm never going to be a DJ, I'm not going to be a DJ. I'll be a serious musician. And then it got to a stage where it was like, I'm a DJ.
And then, yeah, you just DJed on the biggest youth radio program in Australia as well for like five.
Yeah, even that, I fell into that. It was just, there've been so many things that I've fallen into. But yeah, back to energy, it's, yeah, very nursery rhyme. And even the way I sing it, I think I've got a reel on my Instagram where I kind of showed it, but there'll be 20 layers of me singing. And if you were to solo one of those layers, it would sound disgusting, like horrible, like me just like screaming, yelling. But then when you layer them on top, it kind of sounds like this fun group singing.
How does that go when you like, because I was watching your doing energy on like a version and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It must be a challenge to then go, oh, I want to perform it live, but I also want it to sound like the track and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, for that, it was just yelling, you know, and jumping around. Those like a versions, I was newly pregnant and so nauseous at the time. So in between, I was like running to the bathroom and I can't believe I made it through those. I remember when we got the call to do it, I was like, oh, of all the times, it's when I'm newly pregnant and just feeling so sick. It was a challenge.
It looks awesome, though.
Oh, thanks.
Cool. Well, I've got a couple of questions without notice to like wrap it up here. What's one of your favorite gigs? What's like a gig that you loved?
Favorite gig? There's been so many, and they're not even necessarily the biggest ones. Sometimes they're like, I did one recently that was in Warrnambool, of all places. Have you been to Warrnambool?
I don't think so, no. That's where Alex Dyson's from, isn't it? Isn't he from Warrnambool or something?
Yeah, yeah. So it was the last gig I did before I went on maternity leave. So I was like 8 months pregnant. I was kind of pushing it a little bit to be flying. And I took a friend with me because I was really nervous about, you know, going into labor and being stuck or whatever. And we flew to Melbourne, and then it was like a two or three hour drive or something. But I wanted to do it because I was very determined to, you know, play as many shows as I could. And also, you know, you work for yourself, so you kind of have to save up that maternity leave money.
Yes.
And we got there and I was just feeling so out of it. I was wearing tracksuit pants in the car and I had another outfit to get changed into. And I just was like, I can't be bothered changing. And so I like rocked up in my tracksuit pants and things. But then the gig was so cool. They had it set up almost like a boiler room. So the decks were like in the middle and then there were people all the way around.
In the round.
And at first I was like, oh my God, this is like quite dangerous. Like I'm pregnant and I'm going in there, like, and I was huge at the time too, but I went in there and you can be feeling so bad when you're pregnant, but then if I'm performing or DJing, I just totally forget. And it was the most fun gig and everyone was singing Energy and yeah that was really fun.
Because
when Energy came out, it was in lockdown. And so there was like a year that went by that I hadn't ever played it to an audience. And so finally, like a year later, being able to play a few shows and play it in front of audiences and hear them singing it, that was just like so cool.
It's also, you guess, you forget just how nice it is to be like in a room with people who are giving you that energy, that affirmation, that, you know, it's a lovely thing.
Oh, you know what it's like on stage. It's just like, I mean, time just passes. It's just, it's so fun on stage.
It's also, it's like, so if you're doing it every weekend, or as you used to, like as you're doing it like a couple of times a week or whatever, like it kind of, but to, when you have like those one-off experiences like that, it's wonderful. What's a song that always makes you feel good, KLP? Like what's something you can put on? I'm going to ask you for your top five later on. So, you know, don't step on those.
Okay, well, I'm going to, right now then, one that almost always makes me feel good is the Flight Facility song, Lights. Oh, see, this is how bad I am with, like, names of songs.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What is it? Lights Up. Lights Up, the new featuring one. Channel Trey. It's so sick.
Let's go. When the bass slide and that city lights up.
Oh.
Low, high, and that shit lights up.
I haven't listened to this enough. I'm going to listen to this some more. When the bass line in that city lights up. Right. Yeah. I love those guys. They can make a good sounding good music, can't they?
Yeah.
What song, what music do you play when you want to, do you put on music to chill out sometimes? Do you ever like listen to stuff to mellow you out?
Yeah, definitely. One that's had a really good rinsing is the Solange album, A Seat at the Table, which it was kind of like her big one. It had like Cranes in the Sky.
Right.
I play that a lot to chill. I tried to dance it away. But then there's also this radio station that, how do we even start listening to it? I think our neighbours were listening to it one time or something. It's called FIP. FIP.
Okay.
It's like a French radio station.
Oh, wow. Just on the internet or?
Yeah, and they just play the most random stuff, but we'll sometimes put that on in the background.
I'll cut in a bit of FIP. Do you have any songs or music that you think more people should know about? Like, is there something that you love that no one else, you know, is into that?
That's a good question.
Not even no one. I mean, half the stuff I play, I say, is underappreciated, you know, but like people.
Yeah,
still,
yeah.
But they should, more people should know how good it is.
Yeah, there's like this whole, do you know Yacht Rock?
I think that's like the early 80s Hall & Oates kind of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like, the Doobie Brothers, ELO, Electric Light Orchestra.
Yes.
There's like lots of harmonies, like really beautiful chord changes. It's like intelligent music, I would say.
It's funny,
it's the opposite
stuff
of like dance music, you know.
I find that stuff interesting because like we were growing up in the 90s, there was a lot of snobbery about that 80s sound. It was all like too,
yeah,
it was all like, nah, that was. And then I think everyone's kind of circled back to going, oh no, that kind of really smooth early 80s kind of just easing into electro stuff was really good.
Yeah, I think there's like Steely Dan is probably, it's like on the cusp, it's almost like too smooth. It's that's kind, yeah, I'm not into that. It's more, yeah, just there's a few just key songs that just did like beautiful songs that I kind of love. And like I love harmonies in those layers and those vocals so much. And they,
yeah,
I wish more people kind of had that appreciation.
Look, how about this one? The classic.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So good. Yeah.
Isn't it?
Oh. All those backing vocals, all the oohs, just those harmonies.
All right, KLP, last one. What are your top five songs of all time?
Okay, this is so hard because it just changes. But okay, well, one would be, let's just say Pharrell Happy. Because
is this ascending order or descending order? So this is number one.
Oh God, there's no order.
This is the game.
I feel like
this
there's no
game.
Order. Okay, you can pick the order.
Happy Pharrell.
So Pharrell Happy, just because I really love the message. It's so simple, but it's just like such a genius song. And when it came out, I have this vivid memory of Nick and I. I think we'd just moved into our old house and we were like, the video clip is just people walking down the street, like dancing to it.
Yeah.
And I remember this one night, I think we like had a cocktail and we were just like walking down the street, just like singing it at the top of our lungs. I love that.
It's definitely one of those pop songs that like, I think there was a sweet spot there before it became completely ubiquitous and you were kind of like, you know what I mean? But it's still great, but it is everywhere. But it's like there was a moment there where it felt like it was yours.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate it for that moment before.
Sure.
I'd have to say probably No Doubt, Just a Girl.
Yeah.
Not that it's like one of my favourite songs, but it just, of my life and my career and my influences, it would just have, like, I can't not mention it.
I think it is. It's an amazing bit of music. Like the kind of like slight ska beat in it. the like, it's a fun song to DJ with because it's like at the right tempo to go into hip hop. Like it's that kind of.
Yes. Oh my God. Thing. That's what I used to do too. Okay, so then there's just so many, but I've tried
more.
To keep
three
it
more on the list.
A variety. I'd say Madonna, Nothing Really Matters.
Oh.
I really love the production of it, and it's a little more dancey, but again, I love the message behind it and just the way she sung it. I wish she would go back to that era of Madonna now.
Right.
Nothing really matters.
Is this like 2000s era Madonna? Like,
I don't even know.
Yeah, I'm not so across it. Probably. Lovely.
So good.
That's nice.
Oh man. Okay. What have I said? I've said No Doubt. I've said
Happy
Madonna. I've said Pharrell, Happy. Let me just look at my little list that I had. This is so hard.
So I used to ask it without warning people, and that would really like drive people mad. But it's one of my favorite. I love lists, man, because it doesn't matter. But everyone, you know.
So I guess I feel like I have to have a Beatles song.
Good.
And you could probably ask me this on many different days, but I'm just gonna see which one I wanna like. Oh, let's say. Oh.
Day in the life.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, do I wanna do that or do I wanna say like. Oh, there's just too many. okay, let's go back with Golden Slumbers just because I feel like that.
Sure. It sounds like it means so much to you, yeah.
Golden Slumbers fill your eyes.
Smile. And then another one, just so it's like a really rounded selection, I'm going to say Radiohead Pyramid Song.
Oh, wonderful. Love that song.
Do you know
much.
It?
Of
yeah.
Of course.
It's not even my favorite Radiohead song, but I just have such distinct memories of listening to it and just like being overcome with emotion of like things I was experiencing at the time. And I also just like loved it because it's like such a well, it's actually just in 4/4, I think, but it just gives this like feeling.
There's a whole bunch of stuff on YouTube about like, you know, is it in 4/4? What is it? It's all it's a wonderful bit of music.
I jumped in the river, what did I see?
So when I was in high school and we were like very influenced by Radiohead and, you know, Jeff Buckley and stuff, that was a favorite of mine, but just like beautiful and just like makes me feel so many feels.
Wonderful.
I feel like that's like a rounded, you know, Radiohead, Beatles, Madonna.
What I love about it, KLP, is it's a DJ's top five. I respect it. You know, you're like coming
out,
you're thinking,
yeah.
I want to arrange my top five. I want to have a bit of this, a bit of that. I want there to be flow. I want there to be, you know, to represent. I think it's a good top five. I like it.
Yeah, try and represent all the different sides to
yeah,
my
man. Well, you're
taste.
DJing, you're still there. You know, you're trying to keep all sides of your brain happy rather than all sides.
Yeah, you are mate. Cargo Bar right now. You're the audience. I'm trying to keep dancing Ooh. On the dance floor.
I'm sticky, sticky and smoky.
Yeah.
All right, that'll do, mate. Thanks so much.
No, thank you.
All right, sweet.
Thanks so much.
There was nothing to fear, nothing to die.
That's it. Thanks so much for listening and huge thanks to KLP for her time. I really enjoyed that one. If you want to get in touch, I'm Hot Dub Time Machine on all the social medias and I'll see you right back here next time. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.